please, you stupid thing. There's always something. Now the stupid mouse won't work. Or it don't want to work. Alright, got it close.
Recorded live.
Greetings, found sheep of the House of Israel. Well, between Talk Shoe and everything else here, we've just sort of had a comedy of errors. The show is a full hour late. It seems to me, based upon what happened 2 weeks ago, that the, essentially, I think Talk Shoe is using Tuesday nights, the least busy night, which used to be the best night to have a Talk Shoe show. They've gone ahead and used Tuesday nights to fix their problems. And, 2 weeks ago, I wasn't able to have a show until, about an hour and a half late. Tonight, I wasn't even able to call in, much less put a PIN number down. But finally, around, a quarter till 9 o'clock my time, I was able to do so. And, any case, I just have a really, really, really slow computer. Now, here in Southwest Missouri, it has gone and it rained yesterday for about 10, 15 minutes, and it put a fairly good amount of water on there. So, hey, it pretty well wet the ground quite a bit. I think we had maybe a quarter of an inch, or maybe even half an inch of rainfall, maybe more. I don't know. We have Gary. We have Logan. I'm having a heck of a time, and I managed to go ahead and start the show. So we'll see how well it works. I'm recording the thing here. The number, I went ahead and posted it on there. It's number 8955. But, heck, my mouse is not working at all. And, heck, Toshiba number 2 went ahead and died on me. Well, went ahead and got hot and heated out. Some of these old computers, they do that. Their fans no longer work. Anyway, today I was outside for a good, until about, 5 o'clock or so p.m., and I was, trimming some tree branches off with my chainsaw. I was doing a number of things. Some anglomastesis. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was anglomastesis, school days here. Some little goofy little mamzer kid came up, was yapping something here. And about, 10 minutes later, here I am mowing, right next to this car in our lot. And here comes this red-haired, mamzer skank here with a backpack. Don't look at me, you chomo! And I went ahead and gave her an ass chewing. Pretty well talked about how doubtless she was probably already enjoying the carnal affections of a red nigger daddy. Even with her syphilitic couche here, which was probably dripping with pubic lice and syphilis drips here. Chewed on her ass. Tried to go ahead and take her picture. And essentially, I don't know. If I see the couche around here, I'll go ahead and take another picture of her. And probably put her on my forum here. What I've noticed, especially among the Anglo-Mestizos around here, especially the female ones, they assume you're a child molester because, pretty much around here, it seems like they've all enjoyed the sexual affections of their daddies and their mama's latest boyfriend or what have you. I had a number of them here. They were the girlfriends of these two brothers here, who was related to this 6'4" piece of shit here named Philip Brown. And one of them was called Ben Coles, and he pled guilty to second degree molestation of my granddaughter Helen. And, what, you know, well, of course he's guilty. Oh, you know, I've been molested myself. And, you know, hey, you know, look, you Anglo mestizos, you do this crap a lot. You know, heck, I was locked up with these perverts. And, you know, here you have these, what, these nigger wenches that killed their babies. And, you know, heck, they've been molested by their daddies and their brothers and their uncles and their cousins and whatever at the age of 8 or 9 or 10. It's fairly common among the Mamsers here. There was this one woman, Colleen McCullough, who wrote The Thorn Birds. She's part Polynesian, and she got in trouble for saying outright that the Polynesians, go through 12-year-old girls. You know, they're not really virgins after, what, 11 or 12. And generally, beaners are noted for that. But, you know, so are niggers. And what you see, you know, especially with this Trayvon Martin thing and all this sort of thing, what some of the niggers have been rioting because as they look at how dare any beaner, how dare any white man get, you know, go ahead and give them, you know, a question of what are you doing here? Why are you here? Much less go ahead and shoot them when they go ahead and attack somebody who challenges them. And, you know, here are these stupid niggers, and here's this Eric Holder. He's another worthless nigger who essentially was running guns to the beaners and bitching about Florida Stand Your Ground law. Well, folks, all it says is you don't have to run when some nigger or some other criminal is bothering you. You can just go ahead and shoot the bastard. Have done with it. And, you know, here's Eric Holder. And what I see is pretty well a relapse. Now, folks, what does that have to do with the topic for tonight, the Book of Judges? Well, the Book of Judges was Israel's Wild, Wild West era for about close to 400 years. Now, they say from around 1380 or something like that with the conquest of Canaan. I believe it more than likely occurred, what? Probably around 100 years earlier, because I believe that the Hebrews, our forefathers, left Egypt, you know, during the age of the Hyksos, before 1500. So, a lot of this stuff wasn't really written down until Saul was made king in around 1050 or so B.C. And he reigned for 38 years. And you end up getting to the very first book of 1 Samuel, which is the books after Judges. So, the books of Judges occur, there's a 400 or so year history between the last of the book of Joshua and the very beginning of the kings here. Now, in the book of Judges, you had Gideon's son, was an evil bastard, tried to make himself as a king, and he came to a suitably fitting end when he besieged the city, and some woman threw a millstone over the wall and hit him in the head and finished him off. And he was a murderous, evil bastard. He went ahead and killed as many of his, you know, brothers, Gideon's brothers, as they could. So throughout the book of Judges said, every man did as he pleased because there was no king in Egypt. But still, even under the last of the judges, who was Samuel warned the people of Israel, you don't want a king. You really don't want a king at all. And throughout the time, we see where these Canaanites were allowed to run wild. They ran wild, they corrupted the children of Israel, just like this mixed multitude did during their years or 40 years of wandering. So we had about 400 years where it was essentially a wild, wild west to where there was only tribal and local government, family government. And you would see to where they would send, and immediately, there would come up over them. Yeah, it's muggy. It's muggy here in southwest Missouri. It's threatening to rain, so I decided to have a fire and burn all these leaves and stuff that I was trimming. So I pretty well used this old wood. I went ahead and used this new wood and started a fire because now I don't have to worry about it getting out because, you know, essentially the ground is wet here. So anyway, but getting on with it, you had to where the people would follow these Canaanites that they didn't finish off, and then they would immediately be punished by Yahweh with servitude. Not altogether always under, you know, sometimes it'd be the on the eastern bank that was enslaved, sometimes it'd be the western bank, sometimes you would have portions of it to where the Philistines would be especially bad against the Danites, and the Philistines of course would not touch the Reubenites, the Gadites. But on the other hand, the Reubenites and Gadites and the half tribe of Manasseh would have problems with Moab and Ammon and Esau, Edom, because they were the first ones to, you know, be in contact. Whereas they would not have so much problems with the Philistines like the Danites did. What I'm going to do is read the first and second chapter of the book of Judges, and then we're going to cover the very last chapters, because during the Israelite-Benjamite civil war, which was caused because these Benjamites allowed these Gibeonites, these Jews, these Amorites who had fooled Joshua, it occurred during the lifetime of Phinehas. Phinehas was around, what, 25 or so, when he killed this Midianite princess and this Simeonite prince. I think he was around, you know, I don't know how old he was, but he might very well, because his father, Eleazar, was the third in line. His two older uncles were killed because they were lazy and stupid, and they got drunk, and they put in a campfire, strange fire, and they got killed by Yahweh. So Phinehas' father, Eleazar, was the third son. And if his two uncles hadn't gotten drunk and stupid, they would not have, you know, Phinehas would not have been the high priest, but he was. During the very last day. So in the book of Joshua, you know, when it's talking on Wikipedia about the book of Judges, it says that the very last chapters are sort of like an appendix, and it points out that Phinehas was the high priest during that time. So you have about 400 years or so of what the heck government or no government other than tribal government at all. It's sort of like the Articles of Confederation under the United States, to where they had about 7 years or so. And then the Masons and the rest, you know, the founding felons took over and created a consolidated federal Zog Babylon. Gary, you still with me?
Right here.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and immediately go to the book of Judges. You know, I just wanted to go ahead and do an overview of it. A little bit less than 2 weeks ago, we finished the book of Jasher, and the very last chapter of Jasher covers the first book of Judges. And they say that the time is 1425. I believe it was around 100 years, you know, or 75 years or something previous to that. And, You know, that's my belief, is that it occurred, you know, but you read that at the very end of Joshua chapter 24, and Eleazar, the son of Aaron, died, and they buried him in a hill that pertained to Phinehas, the son, which was giving him in Mount Ephraim. Joshua, you know, the son of Nun, had a original Ephraimite name, but he was called Joshua, which meant Jehovah, I believe it meant Jehovah is with us. And, or Yahweh is with us. So, you know, Joshua was not his original name. It was original something else here. He was an Ephraimite. Caleb was a Judean. And the two major tribes, was Judah and Ephraim, the younger son of the house of Joseph, but the other house of Joseph, the one who got a bigger birthright than his older brother Manasseh. But on the other hand, you look at the division, the two half-tribes of Manasseh probably got more land. It was sort of like Texas. They got more land than the other tribes when you can't count that they had quite a bit of it on the east bank of the Jordan and on the west bank of the Jordan. And but the two major tribes, the two most numerous tribes, the two leading tribes were Ephraim and Manasseh. And later on, Benjamin had quite a few sons, but he was not a big tribe, but he was a different tribe. He was a different tribe noted for their left-handed slingers. But I'm going to go ahead and read the book of Judges, chapter 1, verse 1. Now after the death of Joshua, it came to pass that the children of Israel asked the Lord, saying, "Who shall go up for us against the Canaanites first to fight against them?" Verse 2. And Yahweh said, "Judah shall go up. Behold, I have delivered the land into his hand." Verse 3, and Judah said unto Simeon his brother, "Come up with me into my lot, that we may fight against the Canaanites, and I likewise will go with thee into thy lot." So Simeon went with him. Now Simeon was Judah's older brother, Simeon and Levi, and you read in Genesis chapter 49 that both Simeon and Levi were blessed slash cursed that they would be scattered among the Israelites. Well, the Levites were the priests, and they were not given any land other than they were given suburbs. You know, just like Phinehas was given land in Mount Ephraim. From what I gather, it was a rather populous mountain here, more like a plain or something like that. So you read quite a bit about Mount Ephraim, where a lot of the Ephraimites lived, be they Joshua, be they Eleazar, be they Phinehas. But Judah talks to Simeon, and Simeon's land is at the very south end, underneath Judah, around the area where it starts to get dry, you know, near the Sinai Peninsula, you know, from Dan to Beersheba. Well, Simeon got Beersheba. Going on, verse 4, and Judah went up, and the Lord delivered the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hand, and they slew of them in Bezek 10,000 men. Verse 5, and they found Adonai Bezek in Bezek, I guess he was named after his town, and they fought against him, and they slew the Canaanites and the Perizzites. Verse 6, but Adonai Bezek fled, and they pursued after him and caught him and cut off his thumbs and his great toes. Verse 7, and Adonai Bezek said, 70 kings, having their thumbs and their great toes cut off, gathered their meat under my table, as I have done, so Yahweh has requited me. And they brought him to Jerusalem, and there he died. Okay, Jerusalem was also known as Jebus, because that was where the Jebusites were headed. Now we're going to go in the book of Judges, verse 8. Now the children of Judah had fought against Jerusalem, and had taken it and smitten it with the edge of the sword, and set the city on fire. So Judah had taken Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem is sort of like, from what I gather, it's sort of like the Athens, the Acropolis, to where they have a top, a sort of mountain. They have a small little plateau where essentially the king and the main temple and the rest here was sort of like the seven cities of Rome as well. They had a, you know, they had a hill and then they had the rest of it down there, but the children of Judah had taken Jerusalem, also known as Salem, but it was also known as Jebus. And 500 years later, the Jebusites were still in it, but you read that they took Jerusalem slash Jebus and they put it, they burned it out. But guess what? They didn't kill all the Jebusites who had squatted on it. Now, there's some belief that Melchizedek was Shem, and our people believe he was, you know, Yahweh in the flesh. I believe he was Shem myself. But in any case, the Judeans had taken Jerusalem, set it afire, and guess what? Verse 9. And afterwards the children of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites that dwelt in the mountain and in the south and in the valley. So it meant like, you know, they fought them in the mountains, they fought them to the south and in the valley. Verse 10. And Judah went against the Canaanites that dwelt in Hebron. Now the name of Hebron before was Kirjath Arba. And by Arba, that was the name of one of the giants. Arba was the father of many of these Rephaim, these giants, these watcher, you know, women, you know, human women hybrid, Adamite women hybrids. They were, you know, they were huge because these demons had literally had sex here. Not just Satan, but the demons had had sex as well. And we will cover that when me and Logan cover the book of Enoch. Logan wants to cover, I think, the book of Jubilees first, but I think we're going to get to the book of Enoch as well. So, and they shoot, and they slew Sheshai and Ahiman and Talmai. Verse 11, and from thence he went against the inhabitants, Judah, of Debir, and the name of Debir before was Kirjath Sefer. Verse 12, and Caleb said, Caleb was the scout who was from Judah. And Caleb said, verse 12, he that smiteth Kirjath Sefer, you know, a.k.a. Hebron, and taketh it, to him will I give Achsa, my daughter, to wife. Verse 13. And Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, took it, and he gave him Asha, his daughter, to wife. So Othniel, the son of Kenaz, was Caleb's, you know, was Caleb's nephew. He was one of his younger nephews. So essentially, Caleb gave his daughter to this hero who took Hebron. Verse 14. Came to pass when she came to him that she moved him to ask of her father a field, and she lied from off her ass. And Caleb said unto her, what will you? Verse 15. She said to him, give me a blessing, for you have given me a southland. Give me also springs of water. And Caleb gave her the upper springs and the nether springs of Hebron. Verse 16, and the children of the Kenite, Moses' father-in-law, went up out of the city of palm trees with the children of Judah into the wilderness of Judah, which lieth to the south of Arad, and they went and dwelt among the people. Verse 17, and Judah went with Simeon his brother, and he slew the Canaanites that inhabited Zephath and utterly destroyed it. And the name of the city was called Hormah. Verse 18, and Judah took Gaza with the coast thereof, and Ashkelon with the coast thereof, and Ekron with the coast thereof. These are three Philistine cities that Judah took for a short time. Three of the major cities of the five that the Philistines had. Verse 19. And Yahweh was with Judah, and he drove out the inhabitants of the mountain, but could not drive out the inhabitants of the valley, because they had chariots of iron. These Kenites had, you know, also known as Smiths, also known as the sons of Cain, had chariots of iron, just like the Hittites. Just like the Hittites did, because they had been instructed. Tubal-Cain was their, you know, was their, essentially, progenitor's brother from both Lamech of the line of Cain and of, you know, and of, Ada, you know, Ada and Zillah of the line of Seth. Verse 20, and they gave Hebron unto Caleb, as Moses said, and he expelled thence the three sons of Anak. Well, it was also known as Kirjath Arba. So, essentially, Arba was one of the Anaks, the Anakim, the giants. And here it says he killed three sons of Anak. Verse 21. And the children of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites that inhabited Jerusalem, but the Jebusites dwelt with the children of Benjamin in Judah unto this day. Well, later on, David, you know, for my garret, Judah set fire to Jerusalem. But the Benjamites did not kill the Jebusites. They allowed them to come back to the burnt out city and rebuild it. Verse 22. And the house of Joseph, you know, Ephraim and Manasseh, well, at least, you know, Ephraim and the half-tribe of Manasseh went up against Bethel. And Yahweh was with them. So Bethel was on, for my Gary, was on the west bank of the Jordan. Verse 23, and the house of Joseph sent to describe Bethel. Well, see what they did, they sent spies. Now the name of the city before was Luz. Verse 24, and the spies saw a man come forth out of the city, and they said unto him, show us, we pray you, the entrance into the city, and we will show you mercy. Verse 25, when he showed them the entrance into the city, they smote the city with the edge of the sword, but they let go the man and all family. Verse 26, the man went into the land of the Hittites, which is what? Oh, Anatolia, Asia Minor, Turkey. And built a city and called the name thereof Luz, which was the name thereof unto this day. So essentially this man, he may very well have been a Kenite or a sort of Canaanite. He went to these other Canaanites and he set up a new city and called it Luz instead of Bethel. Verse 27, neither did Manasseh drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shean and her town, nor Te'anak and her towns, nor the inhabitants of Dor and her towns, nor the inhabitants of Ibleam and her towns. So these are good-sized cities, which had a number of villages around them. Nor the inhabitants of Ibleam and her towns, nor the inhabitants of Megiddo and her towns. Megiddo was also known as Kadesh. Megiddo is called Armageddon later on. And, you know, from my gather, it was where later on, a couple hundred years later, the Hittites and Ramses II and Egypt's Zenith will have, you know, had a big fight in 1279 BC or so. So, pretty well, about 250, 300 years later, Megiddo had a number of battles. And Kadesh supposedly was the place where most of it was, because you had, you know, you had in, you know, in Palestine, where Africa, Asia, and Europe all get close together. This was a crossroads of both the city of the plain, you know, the city, you know, the coastal road and an east-west salt route. So the Manassites didn't, you know, these are the Manassites, the half-tribe that lived on the west bank of, you know, of the Jordan. Not the east bank, the half-tribe on the earth. But the Canaanites would dwell in that land. Verse 28, it came to pass when Israel was strong that they put the Canaanites to tribute and did not utterly drive them out. Now, folks, they were not, you know, they were not commanded. They were commanded to be a warlike, expansionary people, and they were. But they were commanded to only put to tribute Adamite, you know, towns and cities that are far off. The Canaanites were to be destroyed, and they didn't do that. Within a few years of the so-called partial conquest of Canaan, you read that here are the Manassites. They're sort of like the Texans. They have the most land, both on both banks, and they don't destroy the Canaanites. Certainly not in the city of Kadesh / Megiddo and their towns. No. They allow them to buy them off. Verse 29. Their more numerous brother of Judges chapter 1. Neither did Ephraim drive out the Canaanites that dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwelt in Gezer among them. Verse 30, neither did Zebulun drive out the inhabitants of Kitron, nor the inhabitants of Nahalol, but the Canaanites dwelt among them and became tributaries. So, Ephraim is allowing it, Benjamin's allow it, Zebulun's allow it. Verse 31, neither did Asher, this is toward the north, drive out the inhabitants of Akko, nor the inhabitants of Zidon. Now, the Zidon were these Phoenicians that Finkelshini, Rabbi Finkelshini, likes to claim are Israelites. Nor of Alab, nor of Achzib, nor of Heba, nor of Aphek, nor of Rehob. Essentially, Asher allows them to do whatever. Verse 32, but the Asherites dwelt among the Canaanites, inhabitants of the land, for they did not drive them out. Verse 33, neither did Naphtali drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh, nor the inhabitants of Bethanah, but dwelt among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land. Nevertheless, the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh and of Bethanah became tributaries unto them. Verse 34, and the Amorites, these blonde, blue-eyed, Canaanite Jew devils, heck, the children of Dan, why, they forced the children of Dan into the mountain, for they would not suffer them come down to the valley. So here are the Danites. They have been given their land, and here are these Amorites who are so tough. Essentially, instead, they didn't even bother to conquer any Canaanite cities. Rather, they drove the Danites into the hills, into the less productive lands, not into the rich, well-watered, irrigatable, and fertile valleys, river valleys, stream valleys. No. They drove them up to the marginal land in the mountains. Verse 35, but the Amorites would dwell on Mount Heres in Ajalon and in Shalalbim, yet the hand of the house of Joseph prevailed so that they became tributaries. So the house of Joseph, Ephraim, and the half-tribe of Manasseh did manage to force into tribute, you know, these Amorites. Verse 36, and the coast of the Amorites was from the going up of Akrabim from the rock and upwards. And it says from, from the rock, they're claiming that it was from probably Petra in Edom. Okay. I'm going to go ahead. You know, Gary, you still with me?
I'm right here.
All right. I'll go ahead and unmute. I'll go ahead and unmute Logan. And, you know, see if Logan has any commentary. If I can unmute Logan. I'm having trouble with my mouse because, I don't know, I have a lot of stuff going on. Let's see here. Logan, are you with us?
Yeah, I pretty much heard, basically, I don't have any content, basically. You talked about reading the Book of Enoch someday. That's a lost book that has a lot of information. That's one of the most popular. I know Jasher is the only lost book mentioned in Scripture in the Old Testament twice, and it's referenced in some of the, it's not directly referenced in the New Testament by inference to translators instead of reference, but basically in the Old Testament twice.
The Book of Enoch is referenced in the case of the Book of Jude about these angels who used to be of Yahweh, but now were of Satan, left their former estate.
It's a double witness. It's a double witness. But basically, Enoch was a famous character in the Old Testament, and he walked with Yahweh, and he was no more. And his son was the only man to live longer than Adam. But I believe. See, this is what I think. You said. I know Gary thinks, Melchizedek was not Yahweh in a flesh body, because Yahweh is perfect. Melchizedek was chosen to look after the body of Adam. I believe that at one point I thought it was Seth's grandson that was Melchizedek, but then we read something else where, I think one of the lost books where we read that actually Enoch went up to Yahweh, just like John, St. John the Divine in Revelations. He went into the upper heavens, and he saw a vision with Yahweh and from Yahweh. Well, that's what happened to Enoch. Enoch saw a vision and talked to some of the angels in Yahweh, but he didn't stay up there. He came back down to write the Book of Enoch.
It says
in one of the lost books we read recently, it says that Enoch came back down from heaven, and he changed his name to Melchizedek. So I tend to think that since he got to meet Yahweh and the angels in the spirit, maybe not in a flesh body, but his soul transcended and an energy body, and he got to meet all of them directly, and he was shown stuff so that he could come down and be a great teacher. And it does say that Melchizedek, everybody tried to get him to be king of the earth, and even the non-Israelite, all the pagan mongrels and non-whites, they wanted to make him king, and everybody bowed down to him. He said, no, my job is to watch over the body of Adam. Of course, he never told anybody where it was. It was a secret location. And basically, so that's who I believe Melchizedek is. I believe that it was Enoch. When he came back down, he was given the job on top of writing the Book of Enoch, on top of being a great teacher and teaching some of the secrets of Yahweh to the Israelites who would listen. He refused to be the king of the Israelites. He refused to be the king of the whole earth. And he stayed, most of the time, if he wasn't teaching a small group of people, he was alone, communing with Yahweh, praying to Yahweh, watching over the body of Adam. And so that's why Enoch was so great, is that he transcended, but he did die. He did die in a flesh body. And so, see, Buddy Tucker says there was only two people that never died, Enoch and Elijah. Well, we know Enoch died, and as far as Elijah, I haven't read all the lost books.
Well, later on, it says that Elijah sent up.
I would tend to think that Elijah did die, because even Yeshua even Yahweh in a flesh body was dead for 3 days, and nobody's going to beat him out, okay?
Okay, yeah. Logan, it says later in the Bible that Elijah wrote a letter to Jehu from somewhere. After the, you know, so...
There you go, Steve.
He was taken up and transported.
We read it not too long ago. I don't know if it was Jasher or some other lost book, but it did specifically say that he had came back down after he went up in a chariot of fire. He transcended into heaven. Just like John the Revelator, he went up to the heavens, but he didn't stay up there. He died on the Isle of Patmos, okay? So, see, you've got to read all the scriptures, including the lost books, which were taken out by the Catholic Church, which are just as much scripture, okay?
We'll cover on in your show later on the Book of Enoch then, okay? That's a definite then, right?
That's right.
Okay, because from what I gather,
what I
brought up about Jerusalem, you know, Jerusalem. You read in the first book of Judges that it was captured and burnt. The buildings were burnt. I'm quite sure they killed whatever Jebusites they could find. But a bunch of Jebusites were allowed to escape. And it says that they rebuilt the town and, you know, got back in. And what, 400 or 500 years later, depending on how you look at it, David had to crawl up in the sewer, with his nephew Joab, crafty Joab, and essentially opened the gates, and then they killed all the Jebusites in Jerusalem. And then it became the city of David. So, pretty well you read that Judah conquered, went ahead and conquered the fortified town of Jerusalem, but essentially they didn't kill all the Jebusites, and they came back and they went ahead and continued to maintain it. Now, the old city was sort of like on a hill, like Rome and Athens, sort of like its Acropolis, and then most of the common people would live underneath this hill here, but it was, it was a couple acre hill. And then there's another hill, used to be called Moriah, where Abraham was supposed to sacrifice Isaac, and David bought the threshing floor, and later on Solomon built his temple on the Mount of Olives.
I hate to interrupt, but Moriah, that was the place where Abraham was going to sacrifice Isaac.
That's what I said.
It would have been an evil deed. Moriah, see the way Satan and his followers and the Illuminati work? They take anything evil or satanic and reverse it. So Moriah would have been where something bad would have happened if Satan would have loved for Isaac to have been sacrificed and the angels not to show up with the sacrificial lamb in its place. Well, the winds of Moriah, the satanic group, Jewish, all four, used to be five members, the Eagles, the rock and roll band, the Hotel California. The Hotel California is a satanic song about the winds of Moriah. The winds of Moriah, who was the prince of the power of the air until he's destroyed? Who is the god of this wicked earth and in charge until he's destroyed? Satan. The winds of Moriah is the satanic, the winds of Satan to do evil, and that's what that rock and roll song is about.
Okay. All right. Well, I just wanted to cover that Hebron was also known as Kirjah Arba, and Arba was the father of a good deal of these giants called Anakim, and pretty well Caleb and Caleb's nephew, pretty well, this was around Hebron where Abraham had bought from this Hittite, bought a cave in a field. And we covered this in the book of Jasher to where Abraham, Sarah, Isaac and Rebecca and Jacob Israel was buried in that, and in the fighting, Esau Edom, was killed because he was a crooked old bastard. You know what I mean? So this was around Hebron, but you also had these giants there, and we read that, Caleb and his nephew killed three of the sons of Anak, aka Arba. Okay? You know, three of these giants, three of these big giants. Okay? So, but in Joshua, in Judges chapter 1, which is the very last chapter of the book of Jasher, they point out is that the conquest of Canaan was sort of iffy. And in the case of Dan, it says that the Danites were such wusses that essentially they didn't conquer any towns. The Amorites ran them off, made them live in the hills, live in the less fertile hills. And the children of, you know, the children of Joseph, who were more numerous, you know, bigger, more warlike, stronger, they didn't kill, they didn't go ahead and exterminate these Amorites. Instead, they allowed these Amorites to pay them tribute. And that wasn't what they were supposed to do. But, you know, you read already that the, you know, during the conquest of Canaan, well, you know, under Joshua, you know, for 26 or 28 years, these folks are already losing their edge. They're already, you know, they're already doing things half-assed, okay? I'm going to go ahead and cover, you know, but anyway, I wanted to unmute you, and essentially we're going to go ahead and cover the book of Enoch. Later on, I heard something about you wanting to cover the book of Jubilees later on, but from what I gather, you're going to, right now, you're building a barn or something?
A copy of Jubilees and Enoch, but Enoch is a lot thicker. It's going to take a lot longer to do it. You can knock out Jubilees a lot. I mean, when you do the book of Enoch, it'll be longer than Jasher probably.
Well, it won't, because there's not too much that's covered in the Bible. During the book of Jasher, essentially we were covering the book of Genesis quite a bit.
If you don't want to make a study of it versus anything, see, it's got the book of Enoch has stuff in it that no other books have. That's why Melchizedek Enoch, when he changed his name to Melchizedek, that's why he was basically, you're talking about Solomon being wisdom, well, Enoch had secret knowledge. He was a hell of a lot smarter than, a lot more knowledgeable about Yahweh than Solomon asked for wisdom. Wisdom of what? Wisdom of this world. Make a lot of money and get in trouble having 1,000 wives or whatever.
Yeah.
When you talk about Enoch and Melchizedek, the same person, different name change, you're talking about somebody who had the secrets brought down that was given to him by the angels and Yahweh and themselves. And he got translated up there. And he was told to come down here and be a high priest for Yahweh, and that's why it says when Yeshua came back, he was the order of Melchizedek.
Okay.
Because Yeshua died over Adam's body, and he was watching Adam's body before Yeshua came back to do it. His okay. whole life, he watched Adam's body, Melchizedek did, and then Yeshua died on that and took up the order of Melchizedek. Okay. So anyway.
All right. Well, there's some in Christian identity who thinks that Melchizedek was Shem, okay? Because he lived 600 years after the flood.
I read one of Shem's grandson. It wasn't Shem though.
Okay.
It wasn't Shem. It was Shem. And the angels
I'm just saying there are some people who believe that Melchizedek was Shem, but.
Shem Abraham went with Melchizedek part of the way, and then he was told to go back because he wasn't allowed to see the secret where Adam's skeleton was going to be. And then the angel took over, and the angel of Yahweh guided Melchizedek to the spot.
Okay.
It does say that.
Alright. Melchizedek was Yahweh. He wasn't even an angel. Yahweh knows everything. If it was Yahshua, no. Melchizedek was not Yahshua. Alright. Anyway, Poopy Dog, or guest number 8, asked about whether Enoch was in the original canon. I do know that Papa Cat says, and I think he's correct, is that Esdras, both First Esdras and Second Esdras, was part of the original Apocrypha, which is, and I remember reading it, and Bell and the Dragon, and the Book of Susanna, and Tophet.
Enoch is not part of the Apocrypha.
I know. I didn't read
all
Enoch.
All the 14 books of the Apocrypha are still shorter than the entire Book of Enoch. I've got an entire Book of Enoch, Book 1, Book 2, and Book 3, and it's a lot thicker than the Apocrypha. The Apocrypha has some of the 14 books in there are very short, like the story of Susanna,
mm-hmm,
or Bell the Dragon. I mean, they're very short.
Yeah.
Maccabees 1 and Maccabees 2 are probably the most substantial books in the Apocrypha.
Okay, well, the Book of Maccabees was about the fighting against Antiochus Epiphanes, who was one of the Seleucids, who was mismanaging the province of Judea. What, around about 200 or so B.C. or so is when this occurred here. And in any case, let me go ahead and cover Judges chapter 2. And then I'm going to cover, But anyway, Logan, you said you're building a barn or something like that right now, or what?
I'm going to start that probably this weekend, if I can get my crew together. And, I got a lot of stuff going. I'm not ready to get to come back with my show yet. And I'll let you and Gary know on Friday night or whatever. And I really want my Friday night show to be like your show on Tuesday night, with only hardcore Israelite believers. I don't want a dog and pony show like Thursday.
Well, we'll have, well, yeah, I understand.
I may even change my the night of the week or something. If I can't, I'm either going to ban all the Nimbusters from the very beginning and not unmute them, or I'm eventually going to go to a whole new show name and call number or whatever. Anyway, that's kind of what's going on.
Yeah, well, the thing about it is that the Pisser Possum and the Obagender Bender, they're doing their show on Friday. You have Finkel Sheedy doing his show on Friday. Pretty well the Nimbuster Tards. The Nimbuster Tards will...
Nobody, no Israelites listen to those two shows. It's just a bunch of Mamsers and Nimbusters. I don't want to spend it on it because they're a bunch of...
Well, so Friday night would be the best time to have it. You'll have the Jew boys, and the actual mongrels listening to Finkelschini, and you'll have the Nimbuster Tards and the Sephardic, Sephardic red niggers listening to Visser here and the Obagender Bender, the Nimbusters. So I would say Friday night, the way you got it now, would probably be the best, and we'll just go ahead. I mean,
see what happens. We'll keep it that way.
All right, yeah, well, I would continue with what you got. I wouldn't change. You can always change the, you don't need to change your show. pretty well the Pisser Possum got into a big fight with Finkelschini over what was going on down the hall, and Meerkat Mark Downey and Finkelschini thought the Visser was talking about him, and they had had a big old fight between Finkelschini and the Pisser Possum. Sunday night, when I started my show, everybody was listening to Wickstrom go off about Trayvon Martin, and the Nimbuster Tars, I think, were on Juice Militia. So for about an hour, I had a good deal of peace here. You only had about four or five people there. Now, toward the end, Wickstrom got off, and the Lie Militia people left here, and then we had Nimbuster Tards, and they were, some of them were posting pictures of bestiality here, and I had to go ahead and block a bunch of guests here for that sort of thing. But this is sort of a cozy arrangement. In many cases, the chat is sort of irrelevant when we're having a having a show, because most of the people who are in there don't know all that much here. A lot of times, playing, reading from the Bible is sort of like playing Mozart and Mahler to niggers. The niggers don't like it. It makes the niggers uncomfortable. They run off in the same way as preaching the Bible to Nimbuster Tards. So I sort of think if you cover I think Friday would probably be the best night to go ahead, but you're taking a break. You're going to go on vacation. You're going to go visit Gary, I think, and in the next month or so. So what happens is that, we're talking about maybe, probably, the rest of July, and, not till the end of August, maybe the 1st of September. You're going to take a fairly good vacation from your show then, right?
Yes.
Okay. And essentially, you're not mad at me, and I'm not mad at you. We're getting along pretty good, but you do want to have a vacation.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, I've just got a lot of stuff going on. Hey, listen, you started late. I'm not going to go stay up. How much longer are you going to be on tonight?
I'm probably going to be on for another hour or so. And, pretty well, I'm going to go ahead and read Judges chapter 2, where they talk about that. And then Judges chapter 3, they go on to where this is going on here. Let's see here.
Go ahead and mute me, because I might be making some noise. I'm going to get something to eat and everything.
Okay.
Keep me muted, and then I'll probably just drop off and hang up in a little while.
All righty, Logan. I just want to go ahead and cover how you were doing. All right. Hail victory, Logan. Talk to you later.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, Gary. You're still... I got a little bit bigger control of my computer. You're still with us, are you, Gary? All righty. Well, I was pretty well talking with Logan about what he had planned for his Friday night show. And for my Gary, he's going to take a month, maybe a month and a half vacation. And probably, until, the end of August or maybe the 1st of September, he's going to go ahead and take a break. Okay?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and continue, with Judges chapter 2. The people worship idols. Verse 1. And an angel of Yahweh came up from Gilgal to Bochim and said, I made you to go up out of Egypt, and have brought you into the land which I swore unto your fathers, and I said, I will never break my covenant with you. So here is an angel of Yahweh acting like a spokesman. He's probably going, came up from Gilgal to Bochim. I'm not quite sure where that is offhand. That may have been where the ark, where the tabernacle essentially Israel, even though they got new land here, it wasn't until David came up with the idea to have a temple, i.e. a building. The children of Israel still lived in a tabernacle. In many cases, it seems like this tabernacle was sort of moving about, probably on the east bank of the Jordan and on the west bank of the Jordan, among the three cities of the Levites and other places, because a tent or a tabernacle can be struck. And here's an angel saying, here, I come from Yahweh, I'm telling you this here. Verse 2 of Judges chapter 2. And you shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land. You shall throw down their altars. But you have not obeyed my voice. Why have you done this? Verse 3. Wherefore I also said, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be as thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare unto you. This is within. This is within, probably. You know, probably at the end of the generation which conquered Canaan. Probably in the days of their sons, maybe even the days of their grandsons. But within, 20 to 50 years, here comes an angel saying, hey, you're not obeying me. So since you haven't gone ahead and destroyed these Canaanites that you were told to destroy, I'm going to let them live among you, and they will act as thorns in your side. Verse 4, it came to pass when the angel of Yahweh spoke these words unto all the children of Israel, that the people lifted up their voice and wept. Verse 5, and they called the name of that place Bochim, and says underneath here, or weepers is what, you know, Bochim meant. And they sacrificed there unto the Lord. Verse 6, and when Joshua had let the people go, the children of Israel went every man unto his inheritance to possess the land. Verse 7. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders that had outlived Joshua. And it says elders or high officials, who had seen all the great works of the Lord that he did for Israel. Verse 8. And Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of Yahweh, died, being 110 years old. Verse 9, they buried him in the border of his inheritance in Timnah-Heres, in the Mount of Ephraim, on the north side of the hill Gaash. So, from my hearing, Mount Ephraim wasn't a particular mountain. It was pretty well a hilly country of Ephraim. And there was another town called Gaash. Verse 10, all that generation were gathered unto their fathers, and there rose another generation after them, which knew not Yahweh, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel. So this is why I said just a few minutes ago. This angel is talking probably to the children, the grandchildren, not the children, but the grandchildren of the generation which crossed over Jordan under Joshua's leadership of 26 or 28 years. And I don't think it was even their children. I think it was probably their grandchildren who backslid. Verse 11, and the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served Baalim. Essentially, they served the Baal gods. Verse 12, and they forsook Yahweh, God of their fathers, which brought them out of the land of Egypt, and followed other gods, of the gods of the people that were round about them, and bowed themselves unto them, and provoked Yahweh to answer. Verse 13, and they forsook Yahweh, and served Baal and Ashtaroth. Verse 14, and the anger of Yahweh was hot against Israel, and he delivered them into the hands of spoilers that spoiled them. And he sold them into the hands of their enemies round about, so that they could not any longer stand before their enemies. So, this these verses in Judges chapter 2 tells what happened time after time after time again. These verses in Joshua chapter 2 is telling exactly what happened. Verse 15, whithersoever they went out, the hand of Yahweh was against them for evil, as Yahweh had said, and as Yahweh had sworn unto them, and they were greatly distressed. Verse 16, nevertheless, Yahweh raised up judges. It says by judges, it meant champions. He raised up mighty men of valor and learning and discretion and valor who would deliver them, as Yahweh had said, and as Yahweh had sworn unto them. Nevertheless, Yahweh raised up judges, verse 16, which delivered them out of the hands of those that spoiled them. And we're going to read about how it was Midianites, how it was Amorites, how it was Mesopotamians. It was a number of people, Moabites, who came in. Verse 17, and yet they would not hearken to their judges, but they went a-whoring after other gods, and bowed themselves unto them. They turned quickly out of the way which their fathers walked in, obeying the commandments of Yahweh. But they did not do so. So essentially you'd have a generation which would get soft and fat and stupid and worship strange gods of these people who were thorns in their side. And Yahweh would raise up champions, and for a short time they would obey. But the people who had suffered, and their children who had risen up under these judges, their grandchildren, when things got good, success, they would backslide again. And so you would have this cycle, and this is what Judges chapter 2 says. Verse 18, and when Yahweh raised them up judges, then Yahweh was with the judge and delivered them out of the hands of their enemies all the days of the judge. For repented Yahweh because of their groanings by reason of them that oppressed them and vexed them. So when Yahweh would make a mighty man a judge, they would obey. They would obey Yahweh. They would follow this judge. They would follow this champion that Yahweh had brought. But yet, they backslid. Verse 19, and came to pass that when the judge, the champion, was dead, that they returned and corrupted themselves more than their fathers in following other gods to serve them and to bow down unto them. They ceased not from their own doings, nor from their stubborn way. Verse 20, and the anger of Yahweh was hot against Israel. And he said, because that this people has transgressed my covenant, which I commanded their fathers, and have not hearkened unto my voice. Verse 21, I will also not henceforth drive any from before them of the nations which Joshua left when he died. Verse 22, that through them I may prove Israel, whether they will keep the way of Yahweh to walk therein, as their fathers keep it, or not. Verse 23, therefore Yahweh left these nations without driving them out hastily, neither delivered he them into the hand of Joshua. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and go on. I'm going to go ahead and go on to, to Judges chapter 3. The reason for that is that you have Caleb's nephew delivered them, went ahead, he'd gone ahead and helped kill the giants, and you have the first of the oppressions in Judges chapter 3. And then I'm going to go on to the addendum, because in chapter 4, another period of time. You got to realize that the book of Judges takes up 400 or so years, close to 400 or maybe 500 years. I think more like 400. But Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, didn't live no 500 years. Judges chapter 3. Judges chapter 2 tells why Yahweh did not destroy all the Canaanites. He left them to be a snare, and he wanted the Israelites to destroy them, but they wouldn't. So after Joshua died, and for a short time the elders, remember some of these elders would have been about 86 or so, 88, when Joshua died. Judges chapter 3. Now these are the nations which Yahweh left to prove Israel by them, even as many of Israel had not known all the wars of Canaan. Verse 2. Only that the generation of the children of Israel might know to teach them war, at the least such as before knew nothing thereof. Verse 3. Namely, the five lords of the Philistines. Well, the Philistines were a non-Canaanitish people, and you read in Judges chapter 1 where Judah had conquered 3 out of the 5 major cities of the Philistines, hadn't put them to the sword, and nor was there any reason to put them to the sword because they were a Adamic people. But the Philistines still were there, and they were, well, Philistines. And all the Canaanites and all the Sidonians, these Phoenicians, the Rabbi Finkelstein thinks are Israelites, and the Hivites that dwelt in Mount Lebanon, from Mount Baal Hermon until the entering in of Hamath. Verse 4, and they were to prove Israel by them, to know whether they would hearken unto the commandments of Yahweh, which he commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses. Verse 5, and the children of Israel dwelt among the Canaanites, Hittites, and Amorites, and Perizzites, and Hivites, and Jebusites. Verse 6, and they took their daughters to be their wives, and gave their daughters to their sons, and served their gods. Verse 7, the children of Israel did evil in the sight of Yahweh, and forgot the Lord their God, and served Balaam, and the groves. They served Baal in the mountains and in these sacred forests where they would fornicate, serve Ashtaroth, probably sacrifice their children to Molech or Chemosh. Verse 8, therefore the anger of Yahweh was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hand of Chushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia. And it says Aram Nahath. So essentially, he sold them to the Aramaeans. You know, the ones who spoke Aramaic, who was a son of Shem. And the children of Israel served Chushan-Rishathaim 8 years. So essentially, they became the slaves. They were under the rule of the Aramaeans of Mesopotamia. They were not the Canaanites. They were Shemites. But still, they were under a foreign land, a foreign government under the Aramaeans. Verse 9, when the children of Israel cried unto Yahweh, Yahweh raised them a deliverer. It says a champion. Same word that they use for judge. A deliverer to the children of Israel, who delivered them. Even Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother. Remember? He went ahead and helped Caleb kill 3 giants. Probably who are at least 10 foot tall, but not bulletproof. Verse 10, and the spirit of Yahweh came upon him, and he judged Israel and went out to war. And Yahweh delivered Chushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia, into his hand. And Mesopotamia says the Arameans. You know, Hebrew says Aram. That's the Arameans. and his hand prevailed against Chushan Rishathaim. It doesn't say this Aramaean king was killed, but rather his rulership was destroyed after 8 years. Verse 11. And the land had rest 40 years. And Othniel, the son of Kenaz, died. This is the nephew of Caleb. He would have known about the works of Yahweh from his uncle and from his wife, Caleb's daughter. Maybe he was even a child during the wanderings. Certainly he was alive during the conquest. And he was a mighty man of war, a mighty man of valor. Verse 12, and the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of Yahweh, and the Lord strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab, not a Canaanite, any more than the Arameans are, against Israel, because they had done evil in the sight of Yahweh. Verse 4, so the children of Israel served Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years. Remember, 8 years under the Arameans? Now it's 18 years. More than double. Now this is what? 50 years, you know, add 20 and then 50. This is around probably 70 years after the conquest of Canaan. Because you really, that the elders served what? They served after, you know, Joshua's 28 here, then 17, that's 41 years, then 8 years of servitude under the Arameans, and then 40 years while Othniel lives. So what is that? That's what, 80, that's about 90 years? They're about a fourth of the way down, ain't they? Before the Moabites come in, you know, make them serve. Verse 13, gather unto him the children of Ammon and Amalek, and went and smote Israel and possessed the city of palm trees. So it's not just the Moabites, it's the Ammonites. These little bastards who are not to, you know, also go in there. And these Amalekites who are the worst of the Canaanites. Verse 14. So the children of Israel served Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years. Verse 15, but when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, or Yahweh raised them a deliverer, Ehud, the son of Gera, a Benjamite, a man left-handed. The Benjamites were known lefties, southpaws, especially slingers. Here comes Ehud. Essentially, you have 80 years, and then you have 18 years. So essentially not quite 100 years after the conquest of Canaan, you have another champion coming. Ehud, the son of Gera, a Benjamite. Verse 16, but Ehud made him a dagger which had two edges of a cubit length. So essentially he made him a big old double-edged Bowie knife. A cubit, it's 18 inches. He made him a short sword. Almost, you know, a short sword, and he did gird it under his raiment upon his right thigh. So here he was. Here he was, essentially, the hilt was probably up against his nutsack, and essentially the point was, you know, down to his knees. I mean, heck, 18 inches? Why, hey, well, hell, I'm a 6'2" man. So probably Ehud was, probably at least, he probably wasn't no 5'2". You know, 18 inches? Why, hey, that's pretty well, I'm looking here. I got pretty well an 18-inch thigh. This is on my good leg here, my right leg. My right leg is about an inch and a half tall, you know, longer than my left leg here. I mean, I walk with a limp. So here he was. He was probably a 6-foot-some man, a Benjamite, left-handed. And here he has an 18-inch, at least, Bowie knife. Double edge, short sword, strapped against his left thigh. He's going to pay Eglon a visit. All right. Verse 17. He brought the present unto Eglon, king of Moab, and Eglon was a very fat man. Well, he may have been a very fat man, but he didn't have 18 inches of blubber to save his worthless ass, now did he? Verse 18. And when he had made an end to offer the present, he sent away the people that bore the present. Verse 19, but he turned himself again from the quarries that were by Gilgal, and said, I have a secret errand to thee, O king, who said, keep silence. And all that stood by him went out from him. Verse 20, Ahab came unto him, he was sitting in a summer parlor, which he had for himself alone, and he had said, I have a message from Yahweh unto thee. And he arose out of his seat. Verse 21, he had put forth his left hand and took the dagger from his right thigh and thrust it into his belly, Eglon's. Verse 22, and the haft, essentially he shoved it all the way into the handle. The haft also went in after the blade, and the fat closed upon the blade, so he could not draw the dagger out of his belly. And the dirt came out. Now, dirt came, he went into, says the dirt came out here. He probably went ahead and, you know, by dirt, it probably wasn't actual earth here. It was probably shit. He went ahead and probably severed old Eglon's bowel. Verse 23, then Ehud went forth through the porch and shut the doors of the parlor upon him and locked them. Verse 24, when he had gone out, his servants came, and when they saw that, behold, the doors of the parlor were locked, they said, surely he covers his feet in his summer chamber. Essentially, by cover his feet means he's easing himself. He's indisposed. Verse 25, and they tarried till they were ashamed, and behold, he opened not the doors of the parlor. Therefore, they took a key and opened them, and behold, their Lord was fallen down dead upon the earth. Verse 26, and he had escaped while they tarried and passed beyond the quarries. And it says graven images. And escaped into Sea Arath. Verse 27, came to pass when he was come, they blew a trumpet in the mountain of Ephraim. And the children of Israel went down with him from the mount, and he before them. Verse 28, and he said unto them, follow after me, for Yahweh has delivered your enemies, the Moabites, into your hand. And they went down after him, and took the fords of the Jordan toward Moab, and suffered not a man to pass over. So, from what I gather, the Moabites, who were on the east bank of the Jordan, had conquered, had ruled for 18 years over the children of Israel. So they went and took the fords of Jordan to where the Moabites couldn't, you know, the Moabites were cut off on the west bank, could not escape. Verse 29, they slew of Moab at that time about 10,000 men, all lusty, which meant that they were all stout, and all men of valor, and they escaped not a man. Verse 30, so Moab was subdued that day under the hand of Israel, and the land had rest 80 years. So what we're doing is we're looking at what? About 100. After the 18 years, and you're talking about 80, you're talking about 80 years. Verse 31. And after him was Shamgar, the son of Anath, which slew of the Philistines 600 men with an ox goad. And he also delivered Israel. So essentially from what? Judges chapter what? 3? You're talking of 180 years. After the conquest of Canaan. Quite some time, right? Quite some time. So, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, go to where, you know, chapter 4 is when Deborah and Barak liberate Israel. This is sometime afterwards. This is about what? 180 years after the conquest of Canaan. We need to go back, and the reason that I covered Judges chapter 3 was off now He reigned 40 years. Essentially, he had, after Joshua conquered Canaan for about, what, 26, 28 years? He had another 17 years, so that would have been, what, 40? Then 8 years of, you know, 8 years of under the, you know, Mesopotamian Aramaeans. And then you had 40 years. So, let's see, you had 48 and 40. You had what? 98 years. Then you had 18 years. So that would have been what? Oh, let's see, 98 and 18, that would have been 116 years. And then you have 80 years. So that is what? About 196 years after the conquest of Canaan. So, well, you would have had about 200 years afterwards. So we're taking, we've gone ahead in Judges chapter 3, covered close to 200 years. Which is, well, essentially we're talking about 400 some years between the partial conquest of Canaan. And I wanted to cover, you know, Judges chapter 2, which says what Yahweh had planned. And I wanted to cover the first of the judges. So we have 200 years or so, close to 200 years. All right? Gary, you with me?
I'm with you. I'm all ready to go. I'm ready to go to the stack, bud. Okay?
Okay. Well, I'll let you go. I'm going to go ahead and, I don't know how long I've been covered, but, it's, you know, pretty much, Gary, we're talking about 200 years, the very first of the judges. And in Judges chapter 2, remember I read Deuteronomy chapter 28. You would have the people. They would be good for a generation or two. And then they think, yeah, they get a big head. They think they didn't need Yahweh. They'd have success. They'd have all the good things. And they would worship these strange gods who had left, you know, leave to be there. And you would end up having, well, essentially contamination, adulteration with these Canaanites, to where they became dirty little Jews, right? And so, first time, 8 years under these, you know, under these Aramaeans for 8 years, and then the second time, under these Moabites for what? 18 years. But these Moabites were, you know, essentially their captivity gets worse and worse and worse under more and more and more degenerate people. The Moabites, you were not supposed to intermarry with them ever. You know, the Aramaeans, why, they were a, you know, they were a subset of, you know, Amram, you know, and the, you know, the Bible. You know, the speech here was called Aramaic. Amram, you know, who was the father of Aramaeans, was a son of Shem. So you end up having not only longer periods of time of captivity, but you have it under more and more and more degenerate captors as well. But we've covered about, you know, 200 years. We've covered about maybe 45% of the books of Judges. And then later on, you know, the next time they're under Jabin, the king of the Canaanites. The Canaanites were worse than the Moabites. And you have the, you know, Judges 4 and 5. So we've covered, the reason I want to go and I want to cut to the very end of the book of Judges about the Levites. You know, about these Levites who essentially have turned worthless. They are becoming, you know, these Danites, remember? These Danites, they were such wusses that they couldn't even run any Canaanites out of their cities. The Canaanites made them live in the hills. So I want to go ahead and jump to the book of Judges chapter 18. And what I think I'll do is I'm going to cover, I'm going to go ahead and cover Judges chapter 18 to show how degenerate the Levites had allowed themselves to become, to where they are serving, you know, they are becoming priests into strange gods. And then I may or may not cover the Benjamite Civil War. I think I'm not going to go ahead and cover the Benjamite Civil War tonight, but I'm going to go ahead and cover Judges chapter 18 because it's an addendum. We are talking about, you know, pretty well within 50 years of the conquest of Canaan. We've gone to, what, 200 years under Othniel and then Ehud. I'm going to go ahead and cover, for the end of tonight, Judges chapter 18. And anyway, Gary, when you get tired, you can go ahead and head on out, okay?
And that's what I'm going to do now. So,
all right.
God may bless his word and bless you as you present it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'm sorry that we didn't have it on time here. We were an hour late. So I'm going to go ahead and just make it a two-hour show. Anyway, Gary.
Well, sir, it is what it is.
It is what it is. I mean, Tuesday night should be the best night to do it, but it's, 2 weeks ago, it was the worst night to do it, and the same thing happened tonight here, but finally, TalkStew got itself set up. So I'm going to go ahead and just cover one more chapter, and I'm going to go ahead and let you go. You go ahead and hang on. I'm glad you stuck with me and you and Logan were able to show up tonight, okay?
Okay, good night.
All right, good night, Gary. All right, well, that's Elder Gary from Michigan here. I think he's decided to go ahead and call tonight. I'm going to cover Judges chapter 18, and that's going to be it for the Bible study for tonight. But, heck, it's going to be, what, close to 2 hours. Which is better than the 45 minutes that was, 2 weeks ago. Judges, chapter 18, the idolatry of the Danites. And it's also the idolatry of some of the Levites who have really prostituted themselves. Verse 1, in those days there was no king in Israel, and in those days the tribe of the Danites sought them an inheritance to dwell in. For unto that day all their inheritance had not fallen unto them, among the tribes of Israel. Now you read in Judges chapter 2 that the Amorites were so tough, you know, the more numerous and more warlike of the house of Joseph had managed to put the Amorites under tribute. But the Danites were such wusses. Of course they were sort of like a serpentine tribe. They also had a tendency to wander quite a bit. And they had a special blessing / curse from Jacob Israel in Genesis chapter 49. Verse 2, and the children of Dan sent from their family 5 men from their coast, men of valor, from Zorah and from Eshtaol, to spy out the land and to search it. And they said unto them, go, search the land. Who, when they came to Mount Ephraim, to the house of Micah, they lodged there. Okay, so here they are, Mount Ephraim. Essentially, they're in the land of the Ephraimites, the hill country of Ephraim. When you talk about Mount Ephraim, you're talking about the central part. And Ephraim abutted Judah, and off to the side was the tribe of Benjamin. Verse 3, when they were by the house of Micah, they knew the voice of the young man, the Levite, and they turned in thither and said unto him, I need to cover Judges chapter 17. I guess I'm a tard. Okay, let's see. I'm going to go ahead and go back to Judges chapter 17, okay? Micah's adultery. There was a man of Mount Ephraim whose name was Micah. Verse 2, and he said to his mother, the 1,100 shekels of silver that were taken from thee, about which thou cursed and spoke also in my ears, behold, the silver is with me. I took it. And his mother said, blessed be thou, the Lord, my son. you know, pretty well, what he did is he took about 1,100, you know, he took about 1,100 coins, weighing about an ounce of silver. Shekel means little god, shekel. So essentially, he stole 1,100 from his mother, and she, you know, she, silly woman, had put a curse upon whoever stole it. And turned out it was her own worthless son, Micah, who had stolen it. So then his mother said, bless you. Verse 3, and when he had restored the 1,100 shekels of silver to his mother said, I had wholly dedicated the silver unto the Lord, unto Yahweh, from my hand for my son, to make a graven image and a molten image. Now therefore I will restore it unto thee. So here she is, this silly woman. I'd gone ahead and set aside that 1,100 shekels to make an idol, a graven image. I mean, Micah doesn't have too much morals. He's a Whigger, but his mother is a Whigress too. Here she is talking about how I'd gone ahead, dedicated 1,100 shekels to make an idol. Wiggers squeezes out a Wigger. Verse 4, yet he restored the money to his mother. His mother took 200 shekels of silver, about 200 ounces of it, and gave them to a founder, who made thereof a graven image and a molten image, and they were in the house of Micah. So she takes of that 1,100, she takes what, 200 of it, to make a silver, solid, sterling silver idol. Through to a founder. A founder is, you know, someone who runs a foundry. So I guess he made a little wax idol, packed sand around it, poured the molten silver, into where the beeswax was, and the beeswax went out. It melted from the heat up against the sand, which was pressed against the beeswax idol. The way it's called wasp wax, the wax melted, of course. I don't know what silver melts at, but probably, 8,000-9,000 degrees, something like that. I don't know. Wax isn't able to stand up to that, but, the sand around this, around this wax idol was able to stand it. So essentially a foundry made at a foundry an idol. Verse 5, and the man Micah had a house of gods, and made an ephod and teraphim, and consecrated one of his sons, who became his priest. So here he is. Grandson, who is a Whigger, wants to be a little Baal priest, a Whigger, a little ill. He makes his grandson of the worthless mother, who had an even worthless son, who was a thief and a liar, made a little Whigger grandson. I mean, heck, Whiggeritude ran high in that family. And he made a little ephod. He's imitating the vesters of the high priest here. He's a rich little thieving Whigger. He makes himself a little, all this stuff here. And he has many gods. He made an Ephraim and a Teraphim, which is, some other stuff here. Verse 6, and in those days there was no king in Israel, but every man did that which was right in his own eyes. So, hey, he should have been like the Reverend Mongoloid Hardy and just worshipped himself and saved himself the silver and the gold here. He had done better. Verse 7. And there was a young man out of Bethlehem, Judah, of the family of Judah, who was a Levite. So he's a little mixed. He's part Judahite, but, he's from Bethlehem, Judah. But he's a Levite, and he sojourned there. Verse 8. And the man departed out of the city of Bethlehem, Judah, to sojourn where he could find a place. So here is a Levite. From the tribe of Levi, he is, probably not big enough, not, not, you know, not righteous enough here, but he's a Levite. So he wanders. He's looking for his fortune. He's looking to be somebody's bell priest. And he came to Mount Ephraim to the hand of Micah as he journeyed. Verse 9, Micah said unto him, whence comest thou? And he said unto him, I am a Levite of Bethlehem, Judah, and I go to sojourn where I might find a place or a fortune. Verse 10, and Micah said unto him, dwell with me, and be unto me a father and a priest, and I will give you 10 shekels of silver by the year, and a suit of apparel and your victuals. So the Levite went in. Well, said, so I'm going to go ahead and give you, 10% of the weight of this silver idol I made, and I'm going to go ahead and feed you. I'm going to go ahead and give you a suit of apparel. Verse 11, the Levite was content to dwell with the man, and the young man was unto him as one of the sons. I guess he booted out the grandson Wigger. Maybe he didn't, I don't know. But essentially made the Levite his priest. Verse 12, and Micah consecrated the Levite, and the young man became his priest and was in the house of Micah. Well, hey, we have that going on today. Sort of like when, Lying Larry Blanchard ran from Port Orchard to Tennessee and left poor old Meerkat Mark Downey and Clutch Cummins, former Clayliff in the sexual mask of the Washington State Clan. And hey, Clint went ahead and consecrated old Meerkat Mark Downey with a mixture of Clint Stanky, Jergens Lotion, and Crisco Oil, and made him a no-devil bell priest of the Sapphire of Clunt here. So, folks, this crap is not new. Heck, but at least it was a Levite here, and at least, Meerkat Mark is, white here. He's a total, ass-clown wigger, unlike Jeremy Visser and Obagender Bender, the Aussie train poster. heck. You just have nothing but degeneracy, back then and today. Verse 13. Then said Micah, now know I that Yahweh will do me good, seeing as I have a real live Levite, an RLL, a real live Levite, to be my priest. Folks, this was what? Oh, this was what? About 3,400 years ago, and Wiggers are still Wiggers. They're still ass clowns. They're still, they're still idiots. They can't just go ahead and just openly serve evil or, admit that they worship themselves. No! No! They got to run around and be wiggers. Ass clowns. Judges chapter 18. In those days there was no king in Israel, and in those days the tribe of the Danites sought them an inheritance to dwell in, for until that day all their inheritance had not fallen to them among the tribes of Israel. Well, yes, they'd gotten inheritance. They were just too pussified to go ahead and whoop the Amorites for it. Verse 2, and the children of Dan sent of their family 5 men from the coast, men of valor, from Zorah and from Eshtaol, to spy out the land, to search it. And they said unto them, go, search the land, who when they came to Mount Ephraim, to the house of Micah, they lodged there. Verse 3, and when they were by the house of Micah, they knew the voice of the young man, the Levite. I guess Wiggers know each other. And they turned in thither and said unto him, what brought thee hit thither? And what makes you in this place? And what has you here? And what are you doing here? How'd you get here? What are you doing here? Verse 4, and he said unto them, thus and thus dealeth Micah with me, and has hired me, and I am his priest. I'm his pet bell priest, this tarred Micah. I go ahead and serve this silver idol, which is from this money they stole from his mother. It's sort of like an episode of Dallas. verse 5, and they said unto him, ask counsel, we pray thee, of God, of Yahweh, that we may know whether our way where we go shall be prosperous. So essentially, they ask him, hey, when you're kissing the ass of the silver, you know, graven image that you got here, could you go ahead and inquire of Yahweh while you're kissing the graven ass here? Ask what us Danites should do. Verse 6, and the priest said to them, go in peace, before Yahweh is your way, wherein you go. So essentially he goes ahead and said, okay, go around, you're doing well. Verse 7, then the five men departed and came to Laish, and saw the people that were therein, and how they dwelt careless after the manner of the Zidonians, quiet and secure. And there was no magistrate in the land that might put them to shame in anything. So essentially there's no law, no order, there's no mighty man. They go and they see these Sidonians, these Canaanites, sort of like Jews, who essentially weren't fighting Jews, they were retail Jews. You know, they were Finkelsheeny Jews. You know, they were not Israelites, but they were Finkelsheeny Jews. They could go ahead and buy it wholesale and didn't have a little Brian Reel there to say, come. No. They went ahead and found some lackadaisy Canaanites called Sidonians. Retail Phoenician Jews. Canaanite Jews. So Sidonian was of Sidon, the first son of Canaan. And they were far, you know, and they were far. Let me turn the page on my old reference Bible. Not Schofield. It was, my National Bible Press. And there from the Sidonians and had no business with any man. And when they came unto their brethren, to Zorah and Eshtal, and their brethren said unto them, what say you? Verse 9, the scouts, they say, arise, that we may go against them, for we have seen the land. Behold, it is very good. And are you still? Be not slothful. Go and to enter to possess the land. So arise and go, and let's go ahead and kill these retail Jews, these Canaanite Sidonians who essentially are sort of lackadaisical and don't even bother to keep a guard on it here. Heck, they don't even have a Zimmermanser to protect them, to stand their ground. Verse 10, when you go, you shall come unto a people secure, into a large land, for Yahweh has given it to your hands, a place where there is no want of anything that is in the earth. So essentially these retail Jews, Sidonian, Phoenicians, Canaanites, Finkelsheenite type, can go ahead and get it for you at half retail and just a little bit of cut markup on wholesale. Heck, they're rich. They're rich Jews. Lazy Jews. Verse 11, there went from thence the family of the Danites out of Zorah and unto Eshtal 600 men appointed with weapons of war. So they had 600 men. Verse 12, and they came up and pitched in Kirjath Jearim in Judah. Therefore they called that place Mahanethdan unto this day. Behold, is behind Kirjath Jearim. And essentially this name that they gave it here says Camp of Dan. Mahanethdan. So I guess Mahaneth meant camp of, and Dan meant Dan, of course. Verse 13, they passed thence unto the Mount Ephraim and came into the house of Micah. Verse 14, then answered the five men that went to spy out the country of Laish and said unto their brethren, do you know there is in these homes an ephod and teraphim and a graven image and a molten image? Now therefore consider what you have to do. So there's 600 men and five of them were spies. Who knows that there is a silver idol and a whole bunch of vestrums and a Levite bell priest. And they went ahead and they'd been Kate like niggers, like little Trayvon Martin before he got, well, plugged by, you know, Zimmermanser. Verse 15, they turned the other words and came to the house of the young man, the Levite, even to the house of Micah and saluted him. It says saluted, it says asked, you know, him of, you know, peace. Verse 16, 600 men appointed with the weapons of war, which was the children of Dan, stood by the entering of the gate. So there's 605 of them. verse 17, five men went out to spy the land, went up and came hither, and took the graven image, and the ephod, and the teraphim, and the molten image, and the priest stood in the entering of the gate with 600 men that were appointed with weapons of war. Verse 18, these went into Micah's house and fetched the carved image, the ephod, and the teraphim, and the molten image, and then said the priest unto them, what do you? So what are you doing? Verse 19, they said to him, hold your peace, lay thy hand upon your mouth, and go with us, and be with us a father and a priest. Is it better for you to be a priest unto the house of one man, a goofy wigger who's sort of thieving, or that you be priest unto a tribe and a family in Israel? So essentially they're offering him a promotion. Verse 20, and the male priest, the Levite who was serving the molten idol, his heart was glad. He took the ephod and the teraphim, the graven image, and went in the midst of the people. Verse 21, so they turned it apart, put the little ones and cattle in the carriage before them. So here they are, they're making a migration. Verse 22, and when they were a good way from the house of Micah, the men that were in the houses near to Micah's house were gathered together and overtook the children of Dan. So here comes the posse comitatus. Here comes, the ass clowns of Micah. Verse 23, and they cried unto the children of Dan, and they turned their face and said to Micah, what ails you that you come with such a company? So they're asking, this ass clown, who's priest there, who's Baal priest, and who's Baal, and who's, vestments, and ephods, and teraphims, and whatever. What's wrong, Michael? I mean, you're a thief. Why, hey, what's a little thieving between friends? Verse 24, he said, you have taken away my gods, which I made, and the priest, and you are gone away, and what I want more, and what is this that you said to me? What ails you? You stole my shit! You stole my bell priest, you stole my graven idol, you stole my, you went ahead and you thieved from me, and you say, what ails me? Verse 25, and the children of Dan said to him, let not your voice be heard among us, lest angry fellows run upon thee, and you lose your life with the lives of your household. So they say, hey, indoor voice, Micah, you ass clown. Heck, you don't want to piss off anybody now, do you? That wouldn't be smart. Verse 26, so I guess they made Micah see reason. And the children of Dan went their way, and when Micah saw they were too strong for him, he turned and went back unto his house. Verse 27, and they, the Danites, took the things which Micah had made, and the priests which he had, and came into Laish, and to a people that were quiet and secure, and they smote them with the edge of the sword, and burnt the city with fire. Well, hey, someone who is an ass clown enough to go ahead and steal somebody's silver bell priest, and is Baal priest and his Baal god made out of silver, stolen silver, and his vestments or something like that. What's a little killing of, Phoenicians or Finkelshini Israelites? You will get it for you wholesale, close to wholesale anyway. Verse 28, and there was no deliverer because it was far from Zidon. Heck, it was a far way from the good-sized town. A city of Sidon. Heck. Besides, have you ever noticed Jews to go ahead and stick up for each other, really? And they had no business with any man. It was in the valley that lies by Beth Rehob. And they built a city and dwelt therein. And they called the name of the city Dan, after the name of Dan their father, who was born unto Israel. Howbeit, the name of the city was Laish at the first. Well, folks, they didn't call it New Laish. So like, they call it New Laish, and they didn't think it was so nuts that they had to name it Tyus. They just called it Dan. Which means that, they weren't Jews here. I mean, if they called it New Laish, it'd been New Laish, New Laish. It wasn't, though. Verse 30, and the children of Dan set up the graven idol image, and Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh. So here you have this Jonathan. He is Moses's. He and his priests were priests of the tribe of Dan until the day of the captivity of the land. So, folks, these are people here who really weren't that far off here. Jonathan, son of Gershom. I think they say that was Moses' grandson, this Levite. Verse 31, they set them up Micah's graven image, which he made all the time that the house of God was at Shiloh. Say, so the tabernacle was at Shiloh. They gone ahead and found this grandson of Moses. And I'm not going to go ahead and cover Judges 19, 20, and 21, the Benjamite Civil War. I'll go ahead and reserve that. But folks, within just a couple, you know, within 50 years, you had idolatry. You had these people who were told, and essentially they observed the forms of it. Oh, this is a Levite. But it wasn't. They didn't really care. They didn't, you know, care enough to obey. They didn't know really anything. They just went ahead and formed some of the beliefs here. Oh, Levites make good priests. And grandson of Moses makes a good one here. And here they are. They've gotten their inheritance and they're already serving idols. Folks, you know, we've gone ahead and covered an overview of the book of Judges up to about close to 200 years. But we see that these people did not know how to behave. They did not know how to act at all. And things went bad from there. In case, folks, it looks like we have Poopy Dog and someone else here. I'm going to go ahead and call it a night. I think 2 hours is, you know, it had been 3 hours if this show would have been on time, but it wasn't. I did want to cover an overview of the book of Judges to where here are Uyghurs, 30, you know, Uyghurs who are Levites who are of the, you know, of the house of Ephraim being Uyghurs 3,400 years ago, observing the form of things but not the actuality of them. And folks, we are descended from these people. Some of these people might very well be our ancestors who did not know how to behave, but sort of wanted to half-ass obey, you know, so they make an idol and call him Yahweh and do all sorts of blasphemous, stupid crap. And, you know, this is a tale of weakness, this is a tale of stupidity, 3,400 years ago. Not good, folks, not good. Anyway, folks, I'm going to go ahead and call it a night. I'm going to go ahead and say, Hail Victory. May Yahweh bless. Oh, next week we'll go ahead and I think we're going to go ahead and cover the Benjamite Civil War, and then we'll go ahead and cover some more of the Book of Judges. But, you know, pretty well, you know, it would have been a 3 hour, we would have covered it. But essentially, I started an hour late, and I'm just going to go ahead and call it. I'm going to go ahead and call it night. So, folks, you know, next Tuesday night, you know, be with, you know, well, there's not too many people. Folks, we'll be covering, I believe, the Book of Judges unless something else comes up. So, folks, I'm going to go ahead and say, Hail Victory. May Yahweh bless. Good night.
Call recording has been completed.